There will be a discussion this afternoon, right, Sarah, from 4 to 6? Excuse me, 4 to 5. So tune in for that. But I just want to say that the horror of giving the state the power to put a person to death must be ended. And I feel very strongly that we must all work together to end the death penalty. It is still legal in 34 states to put a person to death. This country is in the is along with China, Pakistan, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. These are the people. These are the countries that we are in league with, or not in league with, who also have the death penalty. As Ben Jealous said this morning, this nation should be a beacon for human rights. And again, as I said, death is irrevocable. Troy Anthony Davis had seven witnesses who recanted their testimony against him, and there was no physical evidence linking the man to the crime. So just think about this and think about what needs to be done. So.
And I'll just make that connection actually to the play. You might wonder if there's any connection whatsoever, but the play deals with pretty amazing themes, and political repression is one of the themes, including the death penalty. So it's just something that kind of touches upon in the play.
Okay.
Just wanted to add that.
We're going to be right back.
It all began when they took me from my home and put me on death row, a crime for which I'm totally innocent, you know. I began to warm and chill to objects and their feels, a ragged cup, a twisted mop, the face of Jesus in my suit, those sinister dinner deals, the meal trolley's wicked wheels, a hook bone rising from my food, and all things either good or ungood. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning, and in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this weighing of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. I hear stories from the chamber. Christ was born into a manger, and like some rags.
Okay, and we're back. We'll be playing more of that at the end of the show. Anyway, welcome again to Laura Margolis. Laura Margolis is with us in the studio. She is the director of a new play, Tennis in Nablus, which is written by Ismail Khalidi. Thank you. Hopefully I'll get it straight by the end of the show. And just to tell you a little bit about Laura, first of all, let me tell you how I found out about this play. Pretty amazing. I'm walking down the street last Saturday, and I'm not someone who normally cares about all the famous people who are showing up in Hudson, but I saw Amy Goodman walking down the street surrounded by several other women, and I, of course, just stopped. My mouth dropped open. I said, "Amy Goodman, yeah," and went up to her, and I said, "What brings you to Hudson?" And she said that she was here to see a play at Stage Works, which is Tennis in Nablus. So she encouraged me to come that night, which of course I did. And I was intending to do some recordings, you know, interview people. And after the play, I just felt that I wanted to just sit with the experience. I just didn't feel like interviewing anyone. That's how powerful it was for me. So with that said, I could also kick myself for not, you know, again, being more participatory in all the wonderful things that Hudson has to offer, but particularly Stage Works. So I'm glad I did make it my way down there that night. Laura Margolis, director, is the founder and artistic director of Stage Works Hudson. Her directing credits for Stage Works include the Amish Project, Imagining Madoff, which is a premiere, Nowhere on the Border world premiere, Car Talk world premiere, Falling Awake American premiere, A Wedding Story American premiere, Dog Stories world premiere, and many regional premieres such as Omnian Gatherum, Lebensraum Gutenberg, the musical, Brutal Imagination and Wit. Highlighting her career are the plays she has directed for Stage Works, annual play-by-play festival of original one acts. Regionally, she has directed at Capitol Rep, Proctor's, SUNY Albany, among others. Laura has received a certificate of recognition from the Columbia County Board of Supervisors for providing original and creative opportunities to the community and the Columbia County Arts Award for Artists for Excellence in Developing and Fostering the Arts in Columbia County. She attended Brooklyn College's MFA in Arts Administration program and has taught as an adjunct professor of theater at SUNY Albany. That's quite a list of credits there.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, StageWorks is just, you know, the love of my life along with, you know, my family and friends. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey to finally, you know, being given. It was donated to us, our own space on Cross Street in Hudson in 2004. So, you know, it's something that I'm very proud of, and very proud of all the people that, you know, come up to our community to work here. And of course, we also have for since our beginnings, you know, used regional talent, you know, theater professionals. And you know, I have to say that, you know, we're known for adventurous work, and without the audiences that come, you know, we wouldn't be able to bring plays such as Tennis and Nobles, which I think is just a beautiful, beautiful piece, and along with being an important play, you know, a piece that speaks of to us today, though the play takes place in 1939 Palestine.
Oh, it's totally relevant. But before we go right into talking about the play, I want to ask about how you got involved in theater. How did StageWorks begin? And what is StageWorks isn't just a place to have theater. It's there's more. It seems to be more of a developmental.
Some great paintings there right now too.
Yes,
I saw before the play.
Exactly, we have an art gallery there. I'm glad you mentioned that. That is curated by the wonderful Mary Udell, and you know, it really enhances and expands on our artistic endeavors at StageWorks. And recently we also have begun, you know, a presenting program where we bring in some, you know, special and wonderful, you know, performers of, you know, all in different mediums in the performing arts. But basically StageWorks started, you know, I had become a resident up here in Columbia County, and at the time that I came, you know, there was the wonderful McCadden and Theater Barn. Yet in our neck of the woods, there really wasn't, you know, a theater. And having been an actor, professional actor, I had always wanted to expand my horizons as an artist, and started doing a reading series here, actually in Hudson, in an art gallery that existed at that time. Then from there went, whoa, this is what I want to do. So I went back to school, as StageWorks began. I went back to school and got to Brooklyn College in the MFA program, so that I could actually learn a little bit about business, founded StageWorks. And until 2004, you know, we were in different parts of the county as renters, and then, you know, as I said, the building was donated to us by CAS Incorporated then, and you know, the world changed. It's always been my ambition to develop new work, and we've done that over the years by our play-by-play festival of new short works, and then over the last several years have really expanded to you know, producing and developing, you know, new full-length plays.
And is your vision to also bring works that would not normally fit in a more conventional setting?
I don't set out to choose a play that way, but you know, I'm always interested, and I'm caught, let's just say, in reading plays by plays that take us on a compelling journey, that take us from a place of darkness to light. It doesn't mean that the light is always a happy ending, but yet there's lightness, something that we have gleaned from this experience, have felt from this experience. And that's not to say that traditional plays, you know, I mean, I think the plays that we choose are traditional, mm-hmm. but I think that maybe in a way the worldview is a little wider. It's still, though, the plays deal with real human beings that we can identify with. But yet, you know, the journey is in some ways exceptional, in some ways, you know, compelling, and I think extremely truthful. And that's, you know, not to say, though, that we don't love and participate in comedies. I mean, The Divine Sister was definitively, you know, a fun time in the theater. And, you know, so we try to vary the season so that it has, you know, some of everything. But usually our play that is kind of our signature piece in terms of full-length work is during this time of year, and it's generally, you know, a play that is new or, you know, in this case with Tennyson Nobles, we're giving this play its second professional production. And in our field, everyone knows that you know, we've got kind of in this country what's called premiere-itis. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to premiere a new play, but getting a second production is very, very hard to do. So we're giving it its East Coast premiere. We're pretty close to New York City. We're hoping that you know, that other theater professionals look into this great piece, and very, very happy to be giving it its second production.
We have Ismael on the phone right now, but before I'm going to bring him on, but I also want to know how you found out about the play. So maybe we'll bring Ismael on, and then we'll find out this one. Okay, hold on one moment. Nope. Ismael, can you hear us? Hello? 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 Well, okay. Well, in the meantime...
Yeah, while you're working that out, do you want me to talk about
how did you find the play?
Well, you know, it's really fun. You know, a lot of people ask, as a matter of fact, a lot of other theaters ask, how did you find, you know, that piece? One, I do a lot of research on what's being done throughout the country, in theaters that do a lot of new play development and contact the playwrights and, you know, ask to see their work. Sometimes other directors suggest plays. They come to us in many different ways. And in the case of Tennyson Nobles, a wonderful playwright who lives in Columbia County in Stuyvesant, his name is James Farrell, has been a part of StageWorks for a long, long time. And he is also works with us as a dramaturg, you know, usually at least once a year. And so James went to Atlanta because of family business and, you know, while he and his wonderful wife, Jamie, were down there, of course, they're theater people, so they said, well, let's go to the Alliance. The Alliance is a wonderful theater in Atlanta, and see what they're doing. So they went and saw Tennyson Nobles, and the second he got back, he called me up and said, Laura, there's this play that I really think is up your alley. It's a kind of adventurous work that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, you should read it. And so I contacted Ismael, and that's how I found the play.
Well, speaking of Ismael, I think he's on the phone. Ismael, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. I can, Christina. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes. Everything's coming through well. Welcome to Tell It Like It Is. And I'm here with my co-host, Kieran O'Reilly, and Laura is in studio with us. Laura Margolis, the artistic director. And Kieran, could you...
Good morning. Good morning, Ismael, and thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, I'm just going to make a quick little intro, if you don't mind. Mr. Ismael Khalidi, playwright, was born in Beirut, Lebanon, and grew up in Chicago. A poet, playwright, and actor, he holds an MFA in dramatic writing from NYU's Tisch School of the Arts. In 2009, he was awarded the Candela Playwriting Prize for Tennis in Nobles, which received its world premiere at Atlanta's Alliance Theater in February 2010, where it was nominated for a Susie Bass Award. In addition to being selected as a finalist for the L. Arnold Weisberger Award for Playwriting from the Williamstown Theater Festival, Tennyson in Nobles has been awarded the Quest for Peace Award from the Kennedy Center, and a second place prize for the Kennedy Center's Mark Twain Award for Comic Playwriting. I just found that to be an amazing combination of being able to bring the comedy into dealing with such heavy, heavy material. And I just wanted to say thank you for writing this play. And I saw it last night, had the opportunity, and absolutely loved it, and think it's very important, especially in light of what's going on today. So welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the kind words and a nice introduction. Although, you know, every time I when you submit these bios, they seem perfectly normal, and then when you have to hear people read them, they sound so indulgent and ridiculous. But no, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I'm glad you made it out to the play, and I really couldn't be happier with the production that StageWorks has put together. I think it's a top-notch production, great actors, great direction, great design, and, you know, Laura really, I think, chose this play at the right moment. I think it's timely in light of what's going on in the world. I also think the play has universal values of tragedy and humor and story and character, of course, but, you know, it is a moment for this.
Yes, it's kind of funny, Ismail, because even though, of course, the ongoing challenges in Israel, were there when you and I first met, neither of us could predict that this, at least I couldn't have predicted that this vote would be coming up at the UN, and it's kind of interesting how that's happened.
Yeah, synchronistic. Just to give people an idea of what the play is about, I'm just going to read a little bit of the on the brochure, the description that is written here. Palestine, 1939, revolution is in the air, blood is spilling on the streets, prisoners are being tortured and hanged, but all the tennis-playing English invaders have on their mind is what they'll wear to the next costume ball. In the brilliant new play, which I agree, tennis and novelists, two nations buckle under conflicting claims to the land they believe is rightfully theirs. And as the world explodes absurdly around them, one divided family must seek their own demons as they seek to achieve peace and freedom with dignity.
Could I just ask you, Ismail, actually, what made you, of all the time periods and ways that you could deal with this very, very difficult and complicated story of the Palestinian and Israeli histories, what made you pick this particular time period under British rule in the 1930s? I found this to be so educational, mm-hmm. as well as just, you know, to see it and to depict it. And that, so just if you could comment on that.
Right. Well, I mean, for several reasons. I mean, first of all, I think 1939 is, an incredibly, it's just ripe with dramatic tensions, with dramatic possibilities. It's right before World War II. It comes at the end of a three-year Arab rebellion in which the Palestinians were fighting the British who ruled Palestine at that point. So, I mean, there was just all this, you know, as a Palestinian, I had grown up hearing stories about this era, about relatives who had fought the British, much like I'm sure Irish-American and Irish people have, you know, grew up with stories about their ancestors and relatives fighting the British. So, you know, for me, it was this kind of very interesting period. You know, the other thing is, growing up as a Palestinian American, I had to learn all the kind of pitfalls and the traps and the places where discussion stopped and where there was just no room to create something new because people were so entrenched in their views, you know, whether it's 48 or more recently. And I just, you know, I do write about those periods, and I think it's important, obviously, to explore them. But I felt like, you know, there was just kind of a historical amnesia in this country when it came to anything before 1948, which is the creation of the State of Israel. And I felt that was very problematic from a historical point of view, and I'm a historian's son. So it felt like, people knew so little about that period leading up to the creation of Israel, that the British even ruled Palestine, that Palestinian identity and Palestinian national aspirations, as well as Zionist national aspirations, existed long before 1948. And it felt like something I needed to tackle, both for its historical importance and its kind of dramatic possibilities.
Wow, well, thank you. Thank you. That's really great. The other thing, I just wanted to comment about, in addition to dealing with the material historically, I felt that, especially with the actors and the writing, that you're able to portray the humanity of the people representing these two groups. For example, the Zionist, who's friends with the Palestinian insurgent. Both these individuals, it's a really human story, and to bring the human element into something where we're so trained, I feel like I know a lot of the history, but do you really know it when you're reading facts and figures and histories of warfare? Like, that's why I feel like the theater, this is a real, I just want to make this comment, sorry for taking over, but I feel like the so-called theater I saw last night is more realistic and educational than the so-called reality in the news. I feel like the news is the theater. And that what you portray, this human story of these groups, gave me, it reminds us, these are people over there with histories, with families, you know, the Zionists and the Jewish histories, you know, all over the world, and then in Palestine, and also the Palestinian histories. And I just wanted to just mention that to anyone wanting to go out to see this, you know, it's a really great story.
Yes. And I think, you know, Laura, who directed it, you know, should take a lot of credit for bringing that out of the actors, and the actors who go out there on stage and bring that kind of humanity and that nuance to the characters also deserve a lot of credit. You know, at the same time, I think that, you know, there's a real problem if Jews and Israelis and Zionists can't portray or can't perceive Palestinians as human, and there's a problem if Palestinians can't perceive, you know, the humanity in Zionists. And, you know, I think that there's inhumane policies that are the issue. And for me, it was important as a playwright to obviously call a spade and shed light on those policies and those histories, which I think are, you know, problematic and inhumane or violent or unjust, but to not, you know, necessarily carry that over to the individuals and to the people. And so for me it was a very necessary thing to inject as much humanity into the Jewish Zionist character as it was to inject humanity and humor into the Palestinian characters. You know, I was probably tougher on the British, but you know, the British can take it. You know, they were
some of the funniest ones.
They ruled half the world for hundreds of years and did so very brutally. So, you know, they can take a little bit of teasing, I think.
Mm. This is Christina, and I wanted to explore a little bit about the beginning of the play. Starts with an interaction between Tariq, a young man who is westernized and believes in the possibilities of the rule of the British, seeing himself, you mentioned earlier about the characterization of a group of people, at one point his uncle, who is the freedom fighter, refers to Tariq as a monkey, you know, or as being a monkey, you know, in the eyes of the British anyway. And so, in a very real way, you explore this dynamic of a younger generation that wants to believe in the
struggles,
right? Or no, in the oppressor, and someone who's only 10 years older than him, his uncle, who is fighting for the freedom of his land. Although even later in the play, both of them start to change positions. So can you explore that a little bit?
You're talking to Ismail? Well, I mean, just this, let me just say, and then Ismail can comment, that's what makes this, you know, a really brilliant play. I mean, you know, it's what play doesn't deal in this. I mean, to me, everything is politics. To me, politics is really, to some degree, an exchange of ideas. So what makes this a play is not the history. I mean, the history gave Ismail a compelling and dramatic setting. What Ismail has done here is really created fully developed and nuanced characters. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we can be two things at one time. And we usually are. That's what the conflict in our own minds are. And so, you know, almost every one of these characters in some way is conflicted not only with the person that they're on stage with, that they're in the room with at sometimes, but they're also conflicted within their own minds. And Tadek is a very good example of that. You know, here's a young man that believes in what he calls rational nationalism. He thinks that everything's going to work out, you know, and then, you know, as the play progresses, you know, he finds himself, oh, we've got trains in Hudson. I don't know if you can hear that.
Yes.
That's CSX coming through.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You can, go ahead, Laura, though. You can still hear me pretty clearly. Yeah.
So, you know, then as Tadek's character develops in the play, you know, we find more depth, we find more conflict, and I'm going to stop for 1 second while CSX goes by. So you don't have this in New York, Ismail. You've got the subways, but I don't think it interrupts a radio.
We have subways and rats fighting in the street.
Talk about conflict. Yeah. So, you know, to me, you know, this play, you know, every character in the play in some way answers the question, what's going to happen to this land? And, you know, in every character in the play has, in a way, their own answer. I mean, what Ismail has done is taken this disparate characters that are thrown together in this land, with the exception of Yusef and you know, his wife Anbada, and you know, Tadek, who were born there, and actually Walid, but yet still, because of the circumstances, there's conflict there. And you know, and you know, when you think about the fact that the fight really is over land, but yet the results, you know, deal with, as you said, you know, real human beings. And these are real human beings, you know, portrayed in a beautifully poetical and, you know, and yet at the same time realistic way, who, you know, have struggles the same as, you know, a lot of people, all of us in some ways. In this way, it's bigger because, you know, it's an exceptional time. 1936 to 1939 was the beginning and the end of you know, the Palestinians, you know, right to their own homeland, and it, so the exceptional times, you know, are asking, you know, these characters, you know, for exceptional reactions, and it's quite beautiful.
Tariq, excuse me, Ismail, do you want to comment on that also?
No, I mean, I think Laura said it well, and I wouldn't really add too much to that.
I want to also ask you about the character Anbara, who is also a very powerful character as a woman, who maybe at the end of the play also questions to some extent her role, because the power of the circumstances are crushing her and her family. Can you talk a little bit about her role and... She might have been the independent media of the day.
right. Well, yeah, in the play, she's a fierce, you know, kind of revolutionary journalist who writes under, you know, a nom de plume, under a pseudonym, you know, under a man's name, in fact, and writes these kind of, you know, revolutionary manifestos and opinion pieces, shall we say, in the local Palestinian press. And, you know, she's very much a powerful character, and it was important to me, and she's the only woman in the play, and yet, you know, she carries so much of the burden of the tragedy. She carries so much of the kind of, you know, for me, she carries the legacy of Palestinian intellectual resistance. And, you know, as I said, I'm the son of a historian, and so for me, that kind of that legacy is a very important one. My great-grandfather was also, you know, founded a paper called Philistine, which means Palestine, in Jaffa, which is a coastal city of Palestine, in 1911. So for me, you know, that legacy is deep, and she really represents and takes on all the burdens and contradictions of it in the play. And I think, like a lot of Palestinian women then and now, she's the one left really holding the weight after all these tragedies, whether it's sons dying or brothers or people being exiled or imprisoned or husbands disappearing. You know, it's in so many, you know, situations of hardship, it's the women, and not just in Palestine. Obviously, I think that was true in the Jewish diaspora. It's true all over the world. You know, women are left carrying that weight. And for me, she carries it with such dignity and sophistication, and yet, you know, has to deal with the real, you know, as Laura was saying, those real conflicts, both internal and external, as to how best to carry that load for her and for those around her. And in her case, because she's a nationalist and an intellectual, it also means carrying the load of her people and her history and their history and their future on her back. So I hope I managed to kind of jam all of that into her as the only woman on stage, and I hope I did justice to that, both that legacy, and all those women that I really based this character off of, both from my family and from, you know, Palestinian history in general.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you brought up the second time that you're the son of a historian, and what happened after seeing this play is I immediately went and started to research again the history of British Empire, how the Jewish diaspora, everything connected to this. And I think it is important. I think a lot of Americans are very afraid of that history. It's a very complex issue. And I think how do you, as a playwright, because you did this, I think, to me, very successfully, get that history across without being overly pedantic?
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's a testament to, you know, to Laura's direction and the acting once again, but, and, you know, the many versions of this play that have been written. You know, it didn't come out, you know, sparkling and ready to go necessarily. So, you know, I did spend time on that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I think that, you know, for me, it's actually not so complex, and I think we're told that it's complex. For me, it's not. You know, for me, all people have humanity, all people have historical and human rights and political rights and national rights, including the Palestinians. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. The Palestinians exist, contrary to what, you know, Golda Meir told us in the 60s, that Palestinians do not exist. They exist. They have a very real history. And, you know, if you do your homework and you present it honestly, it's not really that complex. Mm. You know, the Palestinians have legitimate national historical aspirations. You know, Zionists have political aspirations, which are based on, you know, their religion to the same land. It's pretty simple. I mean, the way that it kind of unfolded can be complex. But for me, those basic facts, you know, that, you know, Jews were victims of centuries of virulent anti-Semitism in Europe at the hands of Christians, might we add, you know, for centuries, and, you know, ended up coming through, you know, the articulation of this political philosophy, nationalist philosophy, Zionism, ended up emigrating in large numbers to Palestine, which was at the time inhabited by people who had lived there for, you know, as long as we can tell. So, you know, that's to me, that's very simple, and that's, you know, the conflict gets messy, but those facts are simple, and I felt like, you know, adding the British into that, and I think that the British at this time played such a clear destructive role in manipulating these two very simple facts that both Jews and Palestinians wanted this land and had a right to it. You know, that's very simple. We know that template from India and Pakistan, what the British did there in partitioning it. We know it from Ireland, Northern Ireland. We know it from Cyprus. We know it from Africa. I mean, the British did it all over the place. So, you know, it's pretty simple. They did it in Palestine, Israel, too. It's not that much more complicated than that, or at least I see it that way, at least as a starting point. In terms of jumping into this history.
And one of the things also that is very clear in the play is that for a long, long time, Palestinians and the Jews had been living together peacefully, you know, in this land. You know, I think that we kind of know that, you know, but it gets clouded over by, you know, all the other things that we think we know about the history of the land. You know, the other factor, you know, that's important is fear. And, you know, you've got, you know, peoples that, you know, that have, you know, centuries of fear. And then you've got, you know, the anti-Semitism and, you know, both the Jews and the Arabs are, you know, suffer from the same anti-Semitism, you know, now vying for a place in this land with a, you know, an oppressor at this time, you know, the British, that is lying to, you know, both groups, playing one against the other. You know, again, I don't think that it, well, until this play, and, you know, I'm pretty knowledgeable in some ways, and I'm also Jewish. You know, I have to say that I learned so much, you know, yet at the same time, you know, I think it's important that we note that if I were to direct, or in the days when I was an actor, if I were to act in Shakespeare, I would be doing the exact same amount of research. I mean, this is a play, and it deals with real human beings in a historical period that most of us don't know much about. Or at least if we think we know something about it, we're misinformed in some way, or we don't have all the information. And so, you know, we kind of, all of us, just relished the opportunity to learn about, you know, the history, but all in the effort, you know, to portray these very real and compelling characters. And again, just the same way as we would, you know, Shakespeare or Molière or, you know, any era that is not, you know, right at our fingertips today, because this does take place in Palestine in 1939. None of us were around then.
Right. I want to ask you, Ismail, to also talk about the two characters, Rajib and
O'Donoghue.
And also the role of Zapata, because I think it feels like that they embodied other parts of other pieces of oppression that occurred under the British Empire, and I love the way that you made them real for people in those characters.
I'm glad you brought them up, and I just wanted to kind of remind your listeners that even though we've had a very kind of intellectual kind of political, discussion and earnest in some ways, you know, I hope and I believe that, you know, this is also a funny play, which, you know, for me it's very, you know, in addition to being tragic and all that, you know, it is funny and for me it's really important. It's a huge part of, you know, being a human, but also, you know, being a Palestinian, and I think being a Jew as well, to be able to laugh at the kind of absurd tragedy of history and one situation. And so for me, it was really important, and that's why I subtitled this the play A Tragi-Politicomedy. It was really important to me to inject some humor, to kind of step back and say, my God, this is so ridiculous. I mean, the British Empire was really such a ridiculous being if you look at it in one angle. I mean, we have this tendency to look at to take the British very seriously in this country. And if we don't, it's Monty Python, but we have this tendency to take them very seriously. You know, if there's, actors, if they're using British accents, you know, can portray anyone from Caesar to, to Churchill to whatever, and it's, you know, but, you know, there's something very absurd and horrifically absurd but comical about the kind of the way that they ran the world. Empire is kind of absurd as in addition to being, you know, horrible and all that. But so to jump back to your, and that was just my disclaimer to make sure your listeners knew this show has had from comedy, I hope.
And from audience reaction, it's clear that people are finding the humor in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned the characters of Rajib and O'Donoghue and of Safata. You know, Rajib and O'Donoghue are British soldiers. They're, you know, conscripts in the British Army, but they're from, you know, they're subjects of the British Empire. O'Donoghue is from Ireland and Rajib is from India, both of which were ruled by the British. So, you know, Palestine, when I started learning about this period, I realized that, you know, there was Australian soldiers and Gurkhas and Indians and Irishmen and Scots all in Palestine. You know, so these subjects of the empire were gathered and put in uniform and handed weapons and asked to go to another end of the empire and subject another people. And to me, I mean, that the irony. But to me, the irony of that was just striking, and the tragedy and the humor, and I felt that there was such an opportunity there to bring in these two characters that represent two of the parts of the British Empire that I think we know the most about in this country, and we have the most kind of storied relationship with as Americans, you know, India and Ireland, and to put them in Palestine in the middle of this, you know, crazy, you know, family drama, this crazy rebellion, and to see what they did, you know. So as a writer, I really just threw them in there, and I said, what are you guys going to do? And, you know, they play cards, and they gamble, and they, you know, get in trouble with the British, you know, the British officers who they do not like, and they do not like. And they, they have a journey. They ended up having this journey, which is a personal journey. It's a journey with their friendship, and it's a journey in terms of their relationship with the Palestinians, and specifically with Yusuf and Tariq, who are in a British prison for most of the play. So, you know, I think that, especially the way the actors play them and the way Laura directed them, they bring a kind of a real lightness and a real mischievousness, and a lot of, you know, rhythm and fun to the play. But I think they also serve a very political, an important kind of political historical purpose, which you mentioned, Christina, which is, you know, tying the oppression of the British Empire, whether it was in Palestine or in Ireland or in India, together and connecting those dots. So I think that they, in many ways, successfully carry that out as characters in the play. And I think what's nice is that in and of themselves, I think they stand as characters, as compelling characters, you know, independent of the kind of historical role they play. And so that was a little bit, you know, more complicated and kind of random addition on my part. And I'll kind of, I'll leave that enigmatic for your audiences to see why, you know, Emiliano Zapata, the great Mexican revolutionary hero, is, who was dead in 1939. Is in Tennis and Nablus. So I'll say go and see it this weekend, which is the last weekend it's playing in Hudson, and see what you think about Emiliano Zapata.
Oh, yeah, that was a wonderful piece when he walked out. I mean, you couldn't help with all the tension. I could feel the play in my body, that then he comes out, and that was a tremendous existential moment there. I wanted to also mention, well, first of all, the beautiful sets.
Yes.
And the level of acting, again, you know, just...
The music as well.
Yes. Which we're going to end with a piece of. We were going to take a break, but I think we're going to talk.
We're very fortunate that John Soule, who's our associate artistic director, you know, after he read this play when we first you know, decided to produce it, and Ismail gave us permission, said that's the piece I want to design. So he designed the sets and the lights for that.
You did.
John Soule.
Oh, John Soule did. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I didn't. Oh my goodness. Oh. I can't even hammer.
The sets were amazing.
Oh, it was a really, really beautiful piece that really fit this great play. And then Will Severin, who is, you know, also from our region, has done sound for us before, sound design for us before. So we were really fortunate to get him. He really understood the piece, I feel.
Well, and to your listeners, I can't reiterate it enough. I mean, you've talked about the acting, which is fantastic, and the directing, which is top notch, and the writing, which I hope brings asks questions and makes you laugh and cry and all that. But I mean, this set is really, it's spellbinding. It's ingenious. It's a character in the show, as is the music. And I think without those two ingredients, the play wouldn't be what it is. And they really, those two things alone almost make it worth going to the show, without all the other stuff, which is also great. And also, going back to the actors, I mean, it's a big cast. It's a big old-fashioned cast. It's 8 people on stage playing multiple characters, many of them. And, besides big, big budget musicals, I don't think I'm, wrong in saying that it's not that often that we get to see 8 actors on stage playing multiple characters anymore, especially in this economy. And I think it's really a testament to the courageousness and the inventiveness and the commitment to just creating art and to the craft of theater on the part of Stageworks and Laura, that they, they're producing in this economy, in this climate, a play with 8 actors and a brilliant set. And, I really do think it pays off, and it's worth, the price of admission.
Yeah, and I can certainly say that you're right. We have to support the arts, because this is an endeavor. She did not hold back in what this play needed to flip.
I also, since we're giving names of designers, I just want to just also say that Natalie Lunn, who is our costume designer, and our fight choreographer, Tim Hall, are just wonderful. And again, these, all of our designers and, our people, theater artists that live in our region, and we're really, really fortunate in our region to have, some very, very fine theater artists. So.
We only have, it's amazing how an hour can go by. In the last couple of minutes, I wanted to talk about, towards the end of the play, without giving it away, how difficult it is to be a human being in the swirl of events, how someone may not be able to step up to the plate of being a hero, and how someone else is whatever a hero is a hero. And I wanted to talk about the universality of this play. And Bara, it was very touching to me at the end when she was counting out money and talking about a wish for a sailboat. And she kept coming back to that sailboat. Can you talk a little bit about that, either one of you?
It's so beautiful. She starts out as, there's a point in the play where she is able to get a nice sum of money, and so in this particular scene that you're talking about, she's deciding what she's going to do with it, and of course with her husband in mind the whole time. At this point, he's in jail, and at one point she says a sailboat, and then later in that very same speech, she says, "Okay, a small sailboat." As she gets more practical and kind of divvies the money up into all those categories of things that she needs and things that are necessary right this minute and things that she wants for her and her family, and it's really beautiful. I don't know, Ismail, do you want to say something more about that?
Well, I guess it's when you're in situations of hardship, dreaming is a dangerous thing, and when you're given the opportunity to dream, in the form of, in this case, money, all these things come out that you didn't know were there, and you have to kind of balance that danger and that hopefulness with the reality of the situation in which you find yourself, which in this case is a very difficult one, which, as we know, as audience members, is not going to get any better up until this day. So for 70 years, at least,
tremendous irony.
So for me, that moment, I think, in the way that it's played by Maria Silverman, kind of sums up those those kind of conflicts within one person, kind of taking the chance or committing the kind of sin of hoping in the midst of a horrible situation.
And then ultimately, you know, going through all these particular, you know, things that she could spend this money on, she ultimately comes to the one main thing, you know, that she could really, you know, spend this money on in this particular moment of her life. I mean, she gets, you know, very real and very practical. I think it's one of the more beautiful speeches that I've seen in contemporary theater.
Oh, did you want to say something? Oh, I just feel that it's painful to get to for, and it's it, and I felt my the empathy of understanding a situation, rising up to the occasion of a situation, fighting for one's homeland, and then at the same time also knowing that there's someone I love. There are people that you love, that we have these human connections. We are real people. We're not, you know, the ideas that other people have of us. And we want, and we have real wants and needs, and we don't want to be fighting for our homeland. We want to be enjoying our lives. We want to be loving the people that we love. And I think you make that very real in this play, that it's not just the Palestinians. It's the way all oppression and oppressors tend to take a people, and again, you've brought that out, I think, a number of times in the play, and make them one-dimensional or make them less than human, so that there's the excuse that, well, these people don't really deserve their own land. They don't know what to do with it.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, not to get, I mean,
sorry,
but just look at today. I mean, you know, really, we're in numbers. You know, this percentage of people are now, you know, in poverty, and so we work in percentages, and yet, it's not until you actually meet somebody that is really living in poverty, you know, that it becomes real to us. I mean, there's always been some type of struggle for people. You know, every group has had a struggle, and you know, we just have to work hard, you know, as human beings, to, you know, to open our hearts and realize that these aren't numbers. These aren't a big blanket group of people called Palestinians, or a big great blanket group of people called Jews. You know, these are individuals. You know, individual human beings, and that's, I think, what this play so poignantly points out to us. It's, you know, this compelling journey of really this one family, this loving, loved, cherished family. And I just really encourage everyone to come see this great piece.
So we're in the next minute. We only have a minute left. Where does the play go next? Ismael, do you know? And I know that people have this weekend to see the play at StageWorks, and you can go to stageworks.org.
Yep, stageworkshudson.org.
Thank you. Where does it go next?
Well, you know, it's yet to be seen. So we'll you know, hopefully it'll head you know, downriver to the city. If not, you know, north or south or east or west. You know, we're hoping every direction. So, you know, the first step is for me, you know, not thinking too much ahead and just, you know, thinking about this production, this beautiful production, and, you know, hoping that it touches the people in Hudson and in the surrounding area, and that they have a good experience with it. And I think that Laura's done everything possible to ensure that. So,
well, you know, but I have to say, by the totally enthusiastic standing ovation that the play received last night, Ismael, I wish you could have been there for it. It just was quite beautiful. And, you know, this play, I know, will have a life, you know, beyond StageWorks, which is always our hope and our pride. And also, I'm just going to say this publicly, that, you know, we're looking forward to the next and new Ismael Khalidi play that better come to StageWorks first.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us. And Laura, tonight, Ismael will be joining you in
We're still
in
working on that. We're working on that.
We're still working on it.
Okay. Yep.
So quickly, just the schedule we have.
Okay,
the
play tonight tomorrow. It's tonight at 7:30, and then Friday and Saturday at 8:00, and then we have a Saturday matinee, which is at 2:00, and also a Sunday matinee that's at 2:00. And again, you know, everything is available at our website at www.stageworkshudson.org, or just call us at 518-828-7843.
There you have it, Stageworks' Laura Margolis from Stageworks and playwright Ismail Khalidi. I hope I'm saying that right. And I want to thank you both so much for being in here and sharing a little bit more about this unbelievable play that I suggest all listening go and watch, Tennis in Nablus.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Badilla, aka Nanu. Listen to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Collinville, Catskill. You know, ha. On the count of three,
everybody run back to your fantasy.
WGXC, founding underwriting support, is provided by Rip Van Winkle Tobacco-Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to reduce cigarette and tobacco marketing in and around stores, for kids' sake. TobaccoFreeNYS.org.
On Pacifica Radio.
This is Al Jazeera.
Welcome to the News Hour. I'm Sami Zeidan from Al Jazeera News Centers in Doha and Washington, D.C. These are the top stories. Afghanistan's leading peace negotiator is killed in Kabul. The Taliban says it killed the former president. A dangerous